Welcome to Crime Beat on the Artist First World Radio Network. Crime Beat, discussing the issues and controversies of the criminal world with famous personalities. Your hosts, Ron Chepsik and Will Hareb, will guide you into the deep underbelly of the criminal mind. To learn more about your hosts, their books, and past shows, visit the Crime Beat archive page. And now, your hosts, Ron and Will.
Good evening, everybody. My name is Will Hareb, your co-host and producer of Crime Beat. This hour-long broadcast puts you, the listener, into the back alleys and boardrooms of the world's most fascinating subject, crime. Our guests will allow you to experience their lives, and this is exactly where you want to be on Thursday night. And it's right here on Crime Beat, brought to you by the Artist First World Radio Network. Tonight we're broadcasting live from our studios in Thunder Bay, Canada, and Rock Hill, South Carolina. Tonight's Crime Beat broadcast presents the one and only Joe Pistone. He's the author of the best-selling book titled Donnie Brasco. The book was made into a hit movie starring Al Pacino and Johnny Depp. Joe Pistone will talk about Donnie Brasco, the FBI, and his life since the movie and his book in just a few minutes. Hey, Ronnie, I'd just like to let our listeners know that our hometown of Thunder Bay, Canada, was declared a disaster area yesterday for heavy flooding. You know what? More than 120 millimeters of rain, that's 24 inches of rain, fell early this week, right, flooding thousands of home basements. You know what? That's equivalent to 3 minutes of water coming over Niagara Falls.
Oh, my God. I'm telling you, I've been in contact with some of my old friends, and they're telling me that it really was a disaster. Some people got wiped out, yeah, didn't have a certain type of insurance, and, you know, Canada's known for its basements because of the cold weather, they got wiped out, right?
Well, you know, that's right. And to make it nastier, the sewage treatment plant shut down, causing massive sewer backups. I'm telling you, my basement wasn't spared at all. I had 3 feet of water in there. We're just cleaning up.
Yeah.
Now, I just wanted to remind any individual interested to support Thunder Bay through the Red Cross relief. You could make a donation online. You could go to www.redcross.ca, or you could call 1-800-418-1111. You could make a donation on Twitter or Facebook. Well, Ronnie, I'm going to introduce you. Now, at this time, I'd like to introduce our co-host and moderator and executive producer, the indefatigable Mr. Ronnie Chepsik. Ron's an award-winning author, documentary producer and director, and publisher. He's a two-time Fulbright scholar to Bangladesh and Indonesia, and a consultant to the History Channel's Gangland TV series. His book, Sergeant Smack, has been optioned for a movie. His latest project is the just-released documentary, The Frank Matthews Story, The Rise and Disappearance of America's Biggest Kingpin. For more information, please go to Strategic Media Books. That's www.strategicmediabooks.com. Given his books, his extensive travels, and in-depth interviews, Ron Chepsik today is the leading expert on the fascinating world of crime. Go ahead, Ronnie.
Thank you, Willie. And here's a little bio of my co-host, Willie Hareb. Willie is a freelance writer and broadcast journalist from Thunder Bay, Canada, who has assisted me on some of my crime books. Willie is currently involved in the international shipping business, where he's a contributing writer to several trade publications. Last year, he published Movers and Mavericks, an anthology about influential people from the Thunder Bay area, with Volume 2 coming out next year. And this summer, he'll publish another book about the famous Giselda shipwreck that sank 100 years ago in Rossport on Lake Superior. Willie?
Well, thanks, Ronnie. Great promo. Always appreciated. You know, our book, Movers and Mavericks, is selling like ice-cold beer on a hot day in Coney Island. Thank you very much. Well, Ronnie, it's going to be a great show tonight, so we invite all our listeners to stay tuned. You won't want to miss this one, that's for sure. Now, just before we reach into our mailbag and read some mail we've received, I'd like to thank all our listeners out there from around the world, that's around the globe, for tuning into Crime Beat. We're thrilled and delighted to announce we've had overwhelming positive comments and thumbs up about our program. We're averaging over 130,000 listeners every week now, and from more than 100 countries, and that's certainly something to cheer about. I'd like to thank all our production people at Artist First World Radio Network, in particular Corey, Scott, and Tony for making this show possible. Also, a special thanks to the Ryan Brothers for allowing us to use their music as our theme song. Like I said, Ronnie, many times, Internet radio is the place to be. It's great to be recognized, and I guess it proves we're right on track. Well, Ronnie, now here's this week's mailbag. This one is from Philip of Cincinnati, Ohio, who writes, "What a great show you had with Ed Fortune last week. Even though it was a rebroadcast, it was timely nevertheless. I personally am a marijuana enthusiast and find it quite relaxing. My hat goes off to Ed Fortune, a.k.a. the Weed Man, for his fortitude and determination to make it legal." Now, this one, Ronnie, is from Morris, from Connecticut, USA. Morris writes, "I've listened to most of your shows, and you guys can deliver. Great tempo, interesting guests, and it seems you're having a ball with this gig. Your broadcast a couple of weeks ago with Patrick O'Connor, who talked about his book, Scapegoat, just goes to show you how twisted the justice system can be, especially for a guy, a black man like Kevin Cooper, who's clearly innocent and can spend half his life on death row." Hey, Ronnie, interesting letters. Any comments?
Yeah, I mean, a couple of years ago, a person would be afraid to admit that they smoke marijuana, but it shows you how brazen the public has become. They just took a poll, 56% of Americans now think that marijuana should be treated like alcohol.
Right.
And, you know, they always talk about how divided Americans are. It's ironic, but pot may bring us all back together again.
if
the polls keep going up. And as far as the show with Patrick O'Connor, you know, it was an eye opener about the death penalty and the broken justice system. Mm-hmm. And we're one of the few countries, that, industrialized countries, that have a death penalty. And you know, if one innocent person is killed, yeah, by the state, you know, it means that they shouldn't have the death penalty. So we'll get more guests on in the future to discuss various aspects of this important topic. Willie?
Yeah, it was a great book. I'll urge all our listeners to get it. You won't put it down. Well, Ronnie, you want to give our listeners out there in that wide expanse of cyberspace a preview of next week's show, please?
Right. Next week we got Anthony DiStefano for a command appearance. He's going to be talking about Charles Carniglia and his book Mob Killer. And you talk about chilling cold-blooded killers. I think Charles Carniglia would be hard to beat. So that's going to be a great show. And as far as what's going on with me, our documentary, the Frank Matthews story, has been selected as an official entry in the Philadelphia International Film Festival Market.
Yeah, congratulations.
Right, and we'll give more details on that. I just got the letter today. So,
hey, way to go.
Yeah, we're looking forward to previewing our documentary on that, Willie.
Yeah. Well, again, congrats. I think you're going to have to get a full-size warehouse for all these awards you're getting. Good for you. Well, Ronnie, as you know, the beat to crime never stops. It never, never stops. Every week, just to get you in the mood, we present our rap sheet part of the program. Our rap sheet feature is a potpourri of news and events from the world of crime. And crime news you might have missed. Now, here's this week's rap sheet item number one. Dateline, May 28th, 2012, Albany, New York. New York Governor Cuomo jumps into the real estate business, selling off state prisons. Hey, Ronnie, get a load of this. One property in Hudson Valley includes a 16-car garage, a piggery, and hundreds of yards of lake frontage. Hey, Ronnie, you want to buy some real estate?
Yeah, you know, it sounds like my house and the property,
yeah.
the property I got here. Yeah, you know, New York has a glut of vacant correctional facilities because of the lower crime rates, new programs that are allowing early release for nonviolent offenders, and they're also dismantling the strict drug laws. And this situation in New York reflects changing national attitudes towards criminal justice policy.
That's right.
The number of state prisoners are declining in 1909 and 2010. It's the first time in almost three decades, and that's according to the Bureau of Justice Statistics. And, you know, we talk about the prison industrial complex. There's a lot of money is going to be lost, you know, because there's a lot of vested interest in keeping this this justice system going and the prison system going. So, but it's a good thing to hear, and they're changing the laws, these draconian drug laws, which have clogged the justice system and our prisons and cost people like me and you know, money. And so that's a good sign.
Yeah, it is. Well, let's keep an eye on that story. And something comes up, let's chip in and buy something.
Right.
What do you say?
Right. That sounds good.
Okay. Anyway, let's get on to the second rap sheet item. Dateline, May 29th, 2012. Vatican City, Rome. One of the Vatican's biggest scandals in decades widened earlier this week with the Pope's butler, arrested for allegedly having confidential documents in his home. Paolo Gabrielli's pledge to cooperate with Vatican magistrates raises the specter that high-ranking prelates may soon be named in the investigation into leaks of confidential Vatican correspondence that have shed light on power struggles and intrigue inside the highest levels of the Catholic Church. Hey, Ronnie, this scandal just might shake up the whole Catholic Church. What's your thoughts?
Yeah, and the butler did it, just like one of those crime novels I used to read. Yeah. You know, where this is Casey actually did it. Yeah, you know, what hasn't come out yet is why this guy did it. You know, did he do it for the money, or did he do it because he couldn't stand the corruption in the Catholic Church? And the other interesting thing is they're, of course, shooting the messenger in typical political style because, you know, the Vatican is a political institution, and they're trying to discredit this guy and, unfortunately, distracting the press from the real story. Yeah. What does this guy have, you know, about the Catholic Church?
Yeah, well, the Pope Benedict jumped in today, and he wasn't very pleased about it. He was acting like a president of some point.
Yeah, right. And the cardinals are calling it a brutal attack on the Pope. But I think it's good. I mean, there's, you know, they operate like in some ways, you know, like a mafia. I mean, they're under investigation now for money laundering. I mean, there's several cases where they're trying to find out what the Vatican is doing with their money. So maybe this is going to help the church.
Yeah, here comes your excommunication letter after that remark, Ronnie.
Well, I think that happened a long time ago.
Okay. Well, we'll keep an eye on that story too. Now, just before we get on with our very special guest, we'll take a station identification. This is Crime Beat on the Artist First World Radio Network. Wherever you are tonight, we hope you enjoy our show this evening. You can listen to our broadcast weekly on this internet band on Thursdays at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. All our shows are archived for 24/7 listening, so if you've missed one, you can check us out anytime. If you have any questions for our guests, you can email us at crimebeat123@yahoo.com. We'll also be glad to incorporate your ideas into our future programs. Well, Ronnie, Crime Beat's featured guest tonight is Joe Pistone. Posing as a jewel thief, Donnie Brasco, FBI agent Joseph D. Pistone carried out the most audacious sting operation ever, working undercover for 6 years. That's 6 years. To infiltrate the flamboyant community of mafia soldiers, captains, and godfathers. Pistone's riveting book is an unforgettable eyewitness account that brings to pulsating life the entire world of the wise guys, their code of honor, their treachery, their wives, girlfriends, and lavish spending and dirty dealings. It's going to be a great show, so stick around. You won't want to miss this one. Take it away, Ronnie.
Thank you, Willie, and welcome to the show, Joe Pistone.
Good evening. My pleasure being on.
Great. It's a real pleasure to have a living FBI legend on the show. And this morning, I spent it, the early part of the morning rewatching Donnie Brasco. And I tell you, it stands up to the test of time. It's still a great movie. Do you still watch it?
Yes, I do. In fact, it's on all the time. And what's strange is, you know, you see a movie about your life, but
right.
I do a lot of work overseas right now,
right?
Training and lecturing overseas, and you know, you wake up at 3 o'clock in the morning, you know, you fall asleep, and you got the television on in Moscow or somewhere, and I said, geez, that sounds familiar, and it's Donnie Brasco, you know.
Yeah, how do you sound in Russian?
If I could speak Russian, I'll let you know. But it is a good you know, not because it's my movie, so to speak,
right.
But it has stood up. I mean, it has legs, and I think what amazes me most is when I talk to directors or producers. Right. And the accolades they give to the movie, you know, other producers or other directors. Mm. So, you know, that goes without saying that that they did a good job with the movie.
Well, what's interesting, and a lot of people may not know this, you know, that really haven't followed you, is that it was really a launching pad because you've really been active. You've got a couple of books out, Way of the Wise Guy, which was a bestseller. You got Unfinished Business.
Mm-hmm.
You did a novel. You've got something on Broadway, right? A play or...
I had a one man show.
Yeah.
Actually, seven books. Donnie Brasco, Man the Cover Life in the Mafia, Unfinished Business, The Way the Wise Guy, The Good Guys, and a couple novels. So it has, and you know, what it also has done. I had a TV show on called Falcone on CBS.
That's right.
And I've produced a couple of TV shows and full length features. And I do a lot of work overseas.
We're going to talk about that a little bit later on that. But you know, the movie came out in 97, and that's a little while ago. When did you retire?
I retired in 96.
Oh, in 96, right? So
96,
right?
Yeah.
But you know, you're very visible, and we understand that you know there was a price put on your head by the mafia, like $500,000. I mean,
mm-hmm.
and at one time you were carrying a gun, and you, you know, you were keeping a watching your step. What happened? Did that go off, or you know, that never happened?
They never lifted the contract, but you know, it's time now, and a lot of my guys, they're still in a can, or you know, they passed on to the other side. Both naturally and unnaturally. You know, the young guys, you know, they're more interested in what they can do for themselves today. You know, I still take precautions, you know, when I travel and stuff. But, you know, you got to get out there and earn a living, you know.
Right.
So you do what you got to do. And
That's true. Do you ever bump into any of the old guys from your old life, you know, accidentally or just...
Well, I have. You know, I still like to go down to Little Italy every once in a while and get a good meal, you know.
Right.
One time, I guess it was about a year ago, a year and a half ago, I was walking down Mulberry Street, and all of a sudden I hear a guy yell out, "Hey, Donnie, what the hell are you doing here?" You know? Having you caused enough trouble in the neighborhood?
Yeah. Well, hey, Joe, this is Willie. You just got a quick one here. I'm going to interject you a quick one. You know, you got to watch your back now. Are there any guys out there that are released from prison? I mean, do you travel disguised, and do you carry a gun?
Yeah, oh, yeah, sure, I carry a piece. Yeah, yeah. I mean, what I do is I travel. I have several different... IDs that I travel with, you know. I don't travel under my real name or anything. I do carry my piece with me. And hey, what are you going to do? You know, it's life. You know.
Right. Did you ever have to pull it out?
With these guys? No, huh?
Yeah.
No. This guy, he was, you know, like I said, he said, "Have you caused enough trouble in the neighborhood?" And I says, "Oh, I guess not, because I never put you in jail." So.
Well, you know. Joe, you said you're working overseas. Is that because it's more low profile overseas, or why are you working overseas? Because you would think that your skills and your talents would be used here in the U.S., but you say you're working mostly overseas.
Well, no, not because it's low profile. It's just that, you know, the if you want to say, you know, the notoriety or fame, whatever, that, you know, that working undercover has brought me, you know, being a so-called expert in undercover and organized crime, it just lend me to conducting undercover schools and organized crime schools in a lot of foreign countries. And I do a lot domestically. I mean, I still do a lot of undercover schools and organized crime lectures in the U.S.
Right.
So
you're working overseas. You said with Scotland Yard, Interpol.
Scotland Yard. I've worked with Scotland Yard. I've worked all over the Balkans, Russia, Italy. I mean, you know, South Africa. You name it. I probably even Siberia twice. So
right. So there's another professional life after the FBI, right? This is 96, and you've been doing this in 96, so that's almost, what, 16 years?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
and, you know, I still, like I said, I still do, I was doing a lot of consulting on movies and, you know, reading scripts and, and editing cop and mob scripts.
So
I do keep busy.
Right. Do you had any situations similar to Donnie Brasco overseas, or is it strictly from the armchair? You know, from the lecture.
Well, most of it. I've done some undercover work over there. Yeah, I had one pretty good case going against the Chinese triads.
Oh, that's interesting.
So yeah, I've had some good work over there.
Obviously, you didn't pose as a Chinese guy, right?
What did you pose as? Surprisingly, I posed as a mob guy. Did that surprise you?
Well, you know, I got a lot of friends in the DA and the FBI. And they always say there's a thin line between being a law enforcement, federal law enforcement officer, and a gangster.
Yeah, well, you know, especially if you grow up on the streets. I mean, you know, I grew up in a pretty rough neighborhood, Italian neighborhood. And I mean, look, I knew wise guys growing up, you know, just from the neighborhood. So I wasn't like enamored with wise guys as an adult or got older, because you spent time in the neighborhood and. Mm-hmm. You know, you knew who the wise guys were, you knew the social club, so it was no big deal, you know. I mean, and growing up as a street smart guy, you're right, you do have that thin line, you know, you go one way or the other way, so.
But, you know, all that was great experience to act, to play that role, Donnie Brasco, right? I mean, not every FBI agent could have played that role. Donnie Brasco, right? Because of your background with your Italian background, being in a neighborhood with mob characters, et cetera, right?
Yeah, exactly. And look, not everybody is cut out to work undercover. I mean, you know, not everybody can work undercover, but that doesn't mean anything, because you know, if you're a law enforcement, you know, you're hired to be a straight up law enforcement officer, and there's not many. You know, there's certain phases of undercover. You know, we like to say, you know, you have undercover, and then you have long term, and then you have long term deep cover. Well, deep cover is what most people can't do.
Yeah, Joe, what attributes does an FBI undercover agent need to have to be successful?
Well, I think the main things are you got to have a mental toughness. You got to have a mental toughness, and what I mean by that is you got to be able to focus on the situation at hand, and you have to realize why you're there. Mm-hmm. You know, and the only reason you're there is you're in an undercover capacity, but you're a law enforcement officer and you're conducting an investigation, and also. Besides having that mental toughness, you got to have street smarts. You know, you got to be aware of the street, what's going on in the street, and what's going on around you. And that's what makes you blend in, where you're not acting like a cop, or you're not acting like an informant. So you know, it's basically that mental toughness, street smarts. And I tell my guys when, you know, at these undercover schools, is that you got to have a lack of anxiety. You know, I don't want to see anybody that sweats in a tough situation. Mm-hmm. You know, you got to have that mental toughness to maintain that focus and have good communications. And you know, most of it you're gonna have to talk your way out of. You know, you're gonna have to be, you know, you're gonna have to be street tough, but. You know, that's your last resort. You know, and you're gonna have to. You know, you see, the thing with most police officers are, and you know this, is that they don't feel comfortable. Once they get that badge and gun, they don't feel comfortable without it. And a good undercover, you know, you leave that badge and you leave that gun in the office. I mean, the only time I carried a gun undercover is when the gangster gave them to me.
Right.
I mean, you know, I worked undercover for 20 years, you know.
Right.
And it depends on what you're portraying.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, if you're portraying a Colombian drug dealer, well, they carry guns all the time.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're not portraying somebody that, you know, that it's not normal to carry a gun, you don't carry one.
Right.
And that's what separates, you know,
the guys
that make it successfully and the guys that don't.
Right.
You got to be comfortable out there without that artillery, and you got to be comfortable working by yourself. You know, so that's basically what it comes down to.
Right. Well, you talked about deep cover. I mean, do you have deep cover? Then you have deep cover. You know, there's 6 years you spent in this role, which is it was unprecedented because I understand that Hoover didn't really like undercover. His people doing that because he thought he'd get corrupted and all that. And so you didn't really have any role models, right?
No. When I came in the Bureau under Mr. Hoover.
Right.
And, you know, we had a small cadre of guys that did undercover work, but it was, you know, it was mostly by bus stuff, you know. We knew there was, you know, stolen art, stolen paintings, you know, some commodity. And we'd go in posing as a buyer, and then, you know, once we made the transaction, we'd buy it. We had no real undercover, deep, long-term, you know, except in the security field. We had a couple guys, you know, that did it, but they weren't looking to go to court and everything. They were just looking, you know, to get in with these... these people and gather information, you know. But then we got into the long-term undercover business. Mm-hmm. And, you know, look, he was right, you know. I mean, undercover's tempting, you know. Have we had agents that gone bad working undercover? Yeah, because the money's tempting and, you know, a lot of things are tempting.
Right.
Every facet of law enforcement has sad stories about agents or their undercovers getting in trouble and getting in problems. And the temptation's there. And that's why I say you got to have that mental toughness to be able to stay focused and know who you are and why you're there and what you're doing.
Right. Did you ever reach the point where you were worried that you didn't know who you were, that you didn't know you were Joe Pistone, and that you weren't Donnie Brasco? Because that movie, Johnny Depp does such a great job. You have to think for a second. You say, wait a minute, he's not a bad guy. He's a good guy. You know, he's Joe Pistone, the agent.
In real life, I didn't. But of course, you know, when they make movies, they gotta turn things around a little bit to make it interesting and, you know, to get the audience going one way and then pulling them back another way. But I didn't, and I think one of the reasons why I didn't, because I never changed my personality. That's another thing about working undercover. A lot of young undercovers think, you know, all bad guys are tough. They
won't
drink. They will, you know, look, I'm not a drinker. I never was a drinker. Mm-hmm. And when I worked undercover, my drinking was one beer or one glass of wine.
Right.
You know.
Right.
You can't change your personality. Once you go from personality A to personality B, that's when you have problems. You can't do it. I just was always who I was, in my normal life, and that's the way I conducted myself as an undercover.
Right. Willie, let's take a quick break and continue with this fascinating discussion.
You bet. Great interview, Ronnie and Joe. At this time, we'll take a brief station identification. You're listening to Crime Beat on the Artist's First World Radio Network with Ron Chepsik and Will Hareb. Our very special guest this evening is Joe Pistone, author of Donnie Brasco. Now back to our show.
Thank you, Willie. And we're back with Joe Pistone, and we mentioned some of Joe's books, which you could all buy, The Way of the Wise Guy, Unfinished Business. You also did a novel, which is really kind of ironic, with Joe Bonanno's son.
Yeah,
with the good guys. Yeah. And, you know, you were probably more responsible than everybody for getting him kicked off the commission, right? I mean, and you actually did him a favor because they escaped the wrath of the law enforcement when they went after them, right?
Yeah, they did. They did. They did. Of course, the father was sick, and it's for another show. But it's a long story how
right.
Bill and I.
Well,
got
so tell
together.
Us how tell us how you hooked up with his son, who you know I noticed on the web he's touted as a godfather.
Yeah, well, actually, Bill and I had an agent friend. It was his agent, and the agent was a friend of mine. Mm-hmm. And just one day, he called. And Bill had been out of the light for a few years.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he did his time in a can, and mm-hmm. you know, he was living out west, and had been straight for a few years mm-hmm. because they had been. You know, like you say, expelled from New York and everything. Mm-hmm. And he said, "Hey, how would you like to do a book with Bill Bonanno? I think it would be a good." And I said, "What, are you crazy?" So he says, "No." He said, "I mentioned it to Bill, and let's meet in New York and and discuss it."
Uh-huh.
So we met at my agent's office. And it was like when you get in a ring with somebody and you
right,
throw a few
right.
jabs and and it's this and so then I had done some I had done some checking and I knew that he had been out of the life for a while and he was he had a couple of legitimate businesses going et cetera.
Right.
And then I said why would you do this with me after after I did the. He said, "Well, He said, "You got a good reputation on the street." He said. He said, "I talked to guys, gangsters mm-hmm. that you dealt with, and everything. And the one thing they said was the guy's a straight guy. He mm-hmm. never flaked us. He never, he never did anything to make us do anything.
Right.
And all the cases that he testified in, he always told the truth."
Uh-huh. And so the mafia respected that.
Yeah. He said you're well respected amongst the gangsters in New York for the way you conducted yourself.
Did you take it as a compliment? I mean,
Well, yeah, I did actually. Sure.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. So we spent a lot of time together, and for those of you that haven't read the book, it's about an FBI agent and a gangster that get together and try to solve some stuff. And what happened was I did the FBI stuff. He did the gangster stuff. And then a friend of mine, David Fisher, the writer, he put both together. And that's what come out of it.
Right. So it was a good experience.
Yeah. He never, in all the times that we met and had dinner, there was never any, any discussion about what I did or
right.
any discussion about what he did, It was
right.
like
And no reflection on the past, with the,
no,
what you
did. No, he talked a couple times about how guys said, Donnie Brasco was just better than we were, and that they respected that I didn't lie on the stand. I told the truth
right.
on a witness stand,
right.
and that I never tried to, right. never tried to get them involved in anything that they weren't involved in anyway. So,
right.
Yeah, it makes you feel good because, you did your job the way it should have been done,
right.
you know.
Well, you did. You had more than 200 indictments. 100. 100.
Actually, we had 235 convictions all told.
Oh wow! Because then it was wrong when I read this morning.
Yeah. Well, I know that. however that goes online, I don't know. But,
right.
All told, when it was all said and done, yeah, that's
right.
That's what we...
Well, my question is, has this been done, this type of investigation with that type of success, been done as since you left the FBI? And number two, can you do that type of investigation today? Go undercover like that
for
6 years?
I mean, we've had guys, you know, go undercover against the mob for, you know, for a year or so, but here's the main thing, Ron, is that these guys went in with informants, right?
Mm-hmm.
Mine was a cold entry.
Mm-hmm.
And a cold entry, I had nobody introduce me.
Right.
You know, I had nobody introduce me. It was just, could it be done today? Yes, it could. It'd be a little harder because of the internet.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because, you know, you can go on, you know, if I say, you know, I'm Joe Blow, you know, they can go on the internet and look up Joe Blow,
right.
You know.
Yeah.
But can you do it? You can. Would they do it again?
Mm-hmm.
I don't think so.
Right. And would the... excuse me, go ahead.
I was going to say, I don't think they'd put somebody out there by themselves for 6 years.
Right.
Right. I don't think they do it.
Right.
Yeah, that begs the question, Joe. You know, when you went undercover in 1976, you were 37 years old. You must have had a family. How did your family take to this undercover role, or did they know about it?
Well, I had been working undercover, you know, way before that, you know. And I had just come off a year and a half undercover operation up and down the east coast of Florida. I mean, up and down the east coast of the U.S. Of course, you know, your wife knows you're working undercover, but you can't tell her what you, mm-hmm. you know, can't talk to her about the cases. So when I finished that year and a half, and like I say, prior to that, I had been doing, you know, 2 week stints a month, 2 months, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So I got involved in it, and after about 7-8 months, the Bureau, you know, transferred my family across the country and everything. So unlike the movie, I wasn't going home, you know,
right.
every couple of days.
You weren't going home.
No,
I found that kind of strange that they allow you to keep this double life going because it's so easy to screw up, right?
Yeah, no, I had an apartment in New York and I had one in Florida.
Oh, and one
out in the Midwest. Yeah.
Well, was all that tension, you know? And I thought Anne Hesh did a great job, you know, playing your wife.
Yeah.
Did that go on? You know, because that was the fascinating part of the.
Yeah,
the movie
the tension
was the
did, tension. Of course. Yeah, the tension did. Of course it did, because look, you're away. You know, you're raising three. You know, she's raising three
right.
kids, and you know, you're home once every, 8 months. You know, 7-8 months.
Right.
For a day, 2 days. So yeah, you had that tension there.
Right.
Sure. And you know that one scene in the movie where, you know. I call home and the lines, you know, the phone's disconnected.
I mean,
that really, you know, that happened.
Right.
You know.
Were you a consultant on the movie?
Yes, I was.
Right.
Yeah.
Did you, what happens when you saw that they're going to portray it that way? You know, did you, it wasn't
well,
your story.
Well, yeah, but, I sat down with them and, you know, and you're in the business. They said, Joe, we're not making a documentary. Our objective,
right, it's not a true story, right?
Our objective is to put asses in the seats,
right?
You know, so there's going to be things in here that you know we're going to twist around a little bit, like one scene where you see Donnie slapping his wife,
right?
I mean that never happened,
yeah. Right? You're right. That scene
That wasn't even in the original script.
Yeah, boy, that must have hurt you when you saw that, eh?
Oh, that I saw him rehearsing on the day, and I go up to the director. I said, "What's this? What the hell is this?" He said, "Well, you know, we changed that." I said, "Well, wait a minute. This is not, you know, So, you know, we got into it for a couple hours on, you know.
Right.
But
they convinced you. They convinced you.
Well, they didn't convince me, but, you know, I had no say. I mean, you know, when it comes to that, you know how it is. Director, you know, with his ship, you know.
Hey, Joe, can a guy get rich at being a consultant today?
You know, you can't get that rich, believe me. I mean, there's good money on it, but, you know, the consultants, they're not, you can consult all you want, and then they do what they want. You know what I mean?
Right.
And that's probably the, you know, you can get a producer credit as a technical consultant, but it's probably the last consultant, producer, money-wise, that, as far as, you know,
right,
as far as on the money scale.
Yeah. Right. But what's interesting is, I mean, your marriage obviously survived through all of that.
Yeah.
Because, you know, the way you describe it, coming, it was like going to war, right? I mean,
yeah.
You know, you're going to duty, you know, overseas, almost like going to war, and then coming home for a couple of days. You must have a very understanding wife.
Well, yeah. Yeah. I always say that the reason being she's Irish, that's why, you know.
Irish and Italian, that's a good volatile combination.
Very volatile, believe me.
How long have you been married?
Too long. Too long to mention, believe me.
That's my answer. You stole my answer.
You're going to get in trouble, Joe.
You know, that's the thing. Well, you know, you're on the set, and, of course, I thought Al Pacino as Lefty did a great job playing this
loser. Should have won the Academy Award.
Yeah, right. That's right. That's exactly right. And he played this loser, you know, that it was trying to, you know, desperately trying to, you know, prove his circumstances.
Yeah.
Well,
and
Johnny Depp, what are these guys like? You know, they're big superstars in Hollywood. And
Well, I think they're both great guys. I mean, Johnny Depp is one unbelievable actor, plus he's an unbelievable individual. I spent a lot of time with him before the movie. I spent a couple months with him, you know, before the movie. I spent every day with him because he wanted me there every day with him when he was shooting.
Right.
And we're still friends today. I mean, we still shoot emails back and forth, and, you know, I mean, we're still friends today. That's the type of guy he is.
Right.
And Al is a great guy. Kind of reserved, but, you know, again, Al's character was not like Al portrayed him. That was their take on him.
Oh, is that right? How was it different?
Well, Lefty was a very neat and fastidious dresser.
Mm-hmm.
He was always dressed to the, dressed to the nine.
And the movie character was essentially a slob, right?
Yeah, and then, you know, as the movie went on, I guess, but, you know, if you know how the you know, movies progress, as the movie went on, you see that he started to dress better, you know.
Right.
But he was always dressed nice and neat, was well thought of within the mob circles, you know. Al just downplayed him a little bit, but
yeah, I thought still, a little bit. It was effective, though. It was effective.
He still should have won the Academy Award.
Yeah, I thought he did an unbelievable job. I didn't realize how good it was till I saw it, you know, this morning. It was really fresh.
On
that sort of thing. You know, when you were watching this, you being on the set and everything, and seeing your story being portrayed, you know, most of it's true or some fiction. Did you think, you know, would I do this again? Would you go through all of that? You know, given you know what you had to go through, 6 years of your life.
Mm-hmm.
Did you ever think?
Yeah, you know,
you got money, you know, and you got success and all that. But I mean, it really took a big part of your life.
Yeah, and you know, you don't see your kids, you know, like, you know, I during those years, I never hit a birthday, I never hit a graduation, I never hit a communion, confirmation.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Christmas Eve, or, you know, I used to,
Have you made up for it?
Yeah.
I mean, the kids must have been strangers when, you know, you came back after your tour of duty.
Well,
call it a tour of duty.
Yeah, well, it's funny, you know. I mean, if you guys be away, and, you know, I mean, I could see what, you know, what guys in the military and stuff go through is, you know, you're really away that long, and you come home, and you're not, you know, you find out that they get along pretty good without you.
Let's take a break, Willie, and we'll go back to our last part of our show. Time's just flying today because it's such a great interview. Go ahead,
yeah,
Willie.
You bet. What a fascinating interview. A great guest, Joe Pistone. At this time, we'll take a brief station identification. You're listening to Crime Beat on the Artist First World Radio Network with Ron Chepsik and yours truly, Will Harib. Now back to Ron Chepsik and Joe Pistone for the remainder of the program.
Thank you, Willie. And we're back with Joe Pistone, who's got a slew of books, The Way of the Wise Guy, Unfinished Business. Just get on the Internet. Go to Amazon.com if you want to get copies. A great great novel with Joe Bonanno's son, Bill Bonanno, the good guys. You're on Facebook, too, and Twitter. People want to connect with you, right, Joe?
No, I'm not.
Oh, because it had your address on it.
I know, but that's not me.
You mean somebody's playing Joe Pistone. Maybe it's Donnie Brasco. Maybe it's Donnie.
Yeah.
Maybe there's a Donnie Brasco out there.
Because I don't know, it was my daughter or somebody. Somebody's got a Facebook and a Twitter, and they say it's you. You know.
Yeah.
I don't have time for that.
Yeah, maybe I'll start mine, John Gotti or something. You know.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, I guess you can. I don't know. I guess you can do anything you want with those, right?
Right.
You can
do, that's right.
Know.
But, you know, I mean to ask you, like, where did you get the name Donnie Brasco? You know, it's got a nice ring, but it doesn't really drip with Italianism.
it is an Italian name, and I don't know. I guess I read it somewhere. I don't know.
Right.
So you
came up with that name?
Yeah, because Donald's my middle name. So
Donald, okay. On that. But, you know, you were talking about that guy that recognized you in the neighborhood and all that. I mean, the mob isn't what it used to be, right, today? I mean, it's really gone downhill since you were dealing with these guys back in the 90s.
Yeah, you know what it is, Ron? It's the generation. I mean, it's not, you know, we're in a me generation, and the same thing has happened to the mob. It's a me generation.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the old timers would cultivate, you know, union leaders. They would cultivate politicians.
Mm-hmm.
They would cultivate law enforcement for the long run. You know what I mean?
Right.
Well, you know, these mob guys today, they're just like the normal generation.
Right.
I want it now. You know.
That's right.
I want to make, you know, $200,000 now. I don't want to, you know, I don't want to start it.
So when you say the media, they reflect changes in society.
Exactly.
You know, because that's the big criticism of today's youth, right? They want everything now without really working hard for it.
Exactly right. They go along right there. And then another thing too, the old timers, you know, the younger generation now, you know, these guys, not all of them, but a lot of them, you know, use drugs. Where the old timers, it was, you know, it was strictly a money making operation.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
right?
Where today, you know, they don't mind using their product. You know, and that's when you get yourself in trouble is when you start. If you're a bookie, if you're a big gambler, you ain't a good bookie. And the same thing, you know.
That's right.
The old timers dealt in drugs, but they never used them.
Yeah.
You know?
Right. But, you know, even the old-timers are getting caught up with this change. You look at Joe Messino, right? He was supposed to be, you described him as last of the real gangsters in one interview, and then you said he wouldn't talk, but he did. He became the first godfather.
Yeah.
I mean, that must have been a shock to see. You must have known that the mafia was on its real decline.
Well, you know something? I always thought there was three real gangsters.
Uh-huh.
Sonny Black, Napolitano,
who was
my capo, who knew he was going to get whacked. And he went and got whacked, right?
Right.
I always thought Joey was a real gangster, and John Gotti was a real gangster.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, John Gotti went to the can, and, you know, and God rest his soul, he died in the can, but he never gave up the life.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Right.
And I didn't think Joey would either,
mm-hmm.
you know, knowing Joey. But, you know, when he heard they were pushing for the death penalty, you know.
Right.
He starts singing like a canary because he didn't want, you know, he didn't want the death penalty. But yeah, you know, they can't do the time, these guys, you know, like,
right.
You know, I can remember guys saying, you know, geez, well, if I get arrested, I'll go away, I'll get in shape, you know, lift weights, don't have to worry about anything for a couple of years.
Right, right.
You know, that was the attitude today. These guys, they couldn't do 5 minutes, let alone,
right,
you know, 5 years.
Right.
Yeah, hey, Ronnie, I got a quick one.
Go ahead.
For Joe. Just a quick one. Now, Joe, when you're undercover, I mean, you had to portray a real tough guy. And did you ever strong arm anybody? Did you get rough on the job, if you want to call it that?
Yeah, you have to. I mean, look, you're not supposed to. I mean, you know, it's in the rules. But look, if you're going to be in a deep cover situation, and you're going to be with infiltrate a group that is violent, because the two things on the street you got to maintain.
Mm.
You got to maintain your credibility, and you got to maintain your respect.
Mm.
And if you lose that respect, you're done. So you have to stand up, you know, stand up to guys, guys that you know you can give a few smacks to. You got to give them a few smacks if the situation arises, because you know once you lose that respect, you're done. You're history. So unfortunately, yeah, you do have to. You know, you are going to get into physical confrontations with other gangsters.
Right.
It's inevitable.
Right. On that. Do you think that the mafia is finished? They'll never regain their old status?
Yeah, you're never going to put gangsters out of business because, you know, there's always guys that don't want to work.
Right.
They want to be gangsters. Will they come back to where they once were? I'm talking about the Italian mafia in the United States. No.
Mm-hmm.
Why? Because they don't control the unions anymore. You know, they don't control politicians and judges anymore. So, you know, they're just another organized crime group that, you know, you're going to have to deal with like other organized crime groups.
Right.
The only thing we got going for us is that, you know, they're not as violent as, you know, as the drug gangs, you know.
That's right. I mean, they're mild compared to the Colombians and the Dominicans.
Yeah, and any of their violence is directed at them.
Yeah.
You know, at other members. You know, it's normally not directed at citizens.
Right.
You know, so.
Yeah. Well, the mafia.
No, you're never going to wipe it out.
Right. The mafia may not have a future, but you definitely do. How long are you going to keep continuing, you know, working and. And doing this type of work that you've made a career of?
Well, as long as they'll have me, because I think, I mean, in the field of undercover with all my school that I give and lectures, I know it helps these young guys because, look, it's a television generation, and it's amazing that they believe this stuff, these cop shows that they see on television, you know? And it opens their eyes when you sit down and you go through a week or 2 week school with them, and show them how it really is. And what makes me feel good is that, you know, I'll have guys come back to me, you know, maybe a year, 2 years later and say, you know something, I was in this operation doing A, B, and C, and it went down, and I thought back. You know something? I did exactly what Joe told me to do, and that's why it worked out successful.
Wow.
So that makes you feel good, you know.
Right. Well, I know you feel good. And this is our last question. I wish we could go on longer, but you were almost made.
Mm-hmm.
You know, as a mobster. Do you regret that you weren't made? That would have been something unbelievable. That would have been probably the height of humiliation for the mafia.
Yeah, I was. I mean, you know, any undercover operation that I was in, I never had a problem coming out of, you know, because, like I said, to me, it was just, you know, it was just a job and an investigation. But I didn't want this one to end, and only because, you know, my argument with the Bureau was, look, We got 6 years invested. Mm-hmm. I'm going to get made in December. You know, right. I'm going to get made in December, and we close the operation down the end of July. Mm-hmm. I said, just for the embarrassment. Can you imagine the embarrassment of the mafia when they find out that they made an FBI agent, an undercover FBI agent? I mean, that's the reason, but I couldn't sell it to the Bureau because of the war that was going on within the mafia and people being killed and everything.
Right.
So.
And you know, I mean, there's 6 years, you're always testing your luck, too, a little bit, too. So
maybe
it turned out the best, but... We got to stop it here, Joe. What a pleasure and honor to have you on the show.
My pleasure.
On the show, we really appreciate it, and we encourage our listeners to go get your books. I got Blockbuster Donnie Brasco for 99 cents today. You know, so you're not going to break the bank if you.
No, not with that.
On that sort of thing. But Joe, we got to get you back on the show again.
Yeah, anytime.
Okay then. Well, thank you so much. We really enjoyed it.
Okay, appreciate
good night.
It.
Thank you.
Good night. Thank you very
okay,
much.
You're welcome.
Good night, Joe. Well, hey, Ronnie. Thanks again, and thanks to our featured guest, Joe Pistone. It was a fascinating interview, and we were delighted to have him on our program. Hey, Ronnie, what did you learn about our interview tonight?
Well, it was really great to finally meet and talk to the guy behind the Donnie Brasco legend. I couldn't see spending 6 years working undercover. But after talking with Joe, I can see why he is the man who could do it. And it's a real treat. How about you, Willie?
Well, you know, I learned that Joe Pistone was a hell of a FBI agent. He managed to infiltrate the mob and find out what made the Bonanno family tick. His dogged undercover pursuit was great. It resulted in over, he said, 230 convictions. That's colossal. You know, this guy knew his stuff and dealt a serious blow to the mafia. Well, now, Ronnie, at this time, we're going to bring you our crime beat joke of the month. Let's see if you get this one. Hey, late one night in the capital city, Washington, D.C., a mugger wearing a ski mask jumped into the path of a well-dressed man and stuck a gun in his ribs. Give me your money, he demanded. Indignant, the affluent man replied, you can't do this. I'm a U.S. congressman. In that case, replied the robber, give me my money.
There's a lot of truth in humor, right?
You bet. That's a good one. I like that.
That's a really good one.
On that.
Well, you finally got a good one, Willie.
Yeah, well, thanks, Ron.
You know, I mean, that was a good one. Go ahead.
They're laughing in the foreclosure.
Well, Albania, they're laughing in Albania.
Good
you know, in a mountain, in the mountains of Albania. How's that?
I hope they are. Now, just a reminder for all you listeners out there, our next program is scheduled for June 7th. Our guest will be writer Tony DeStefano, who will discuss his chilling investigation and book Mob Killer, the story of mafia hitman Charles Carneglia of the deadly and notorious Gambino crime family. It's going to be another great show, so make sure you mark it on your calendar. You won't want to miss this one. We hope you enjoyed Crime Beat this evening on the Artist First World Radio Network with Ron Chepsik and yours truly. For all of you out there, you can listen to all our past Crime Beat programs anytime by going to the archive on the Artist First World Radio Network. Wherever you are, we would like to thank all of you out there for listening to our broadcast this evening. In the meantime, we welcome your emails and thoughts about our program. You can email us at crimebeat123@yahoo.com, and please spread the word about the program. And until next week, and on behalf of Ron Chepsik and myself, Will Rib, we hope you tune into Crime Beat next Thursday, same time at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, where you want to have a front row seat to the fascinating world of crime. Have a pleasant evening, everybody. Good night, Ronnie.
Sleep tight, Willie.